Current State on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Glad you're with us. Reach us at currentstate@wkar.org. We continue to get programming ideas and story ideas from people all over mid-Michigan and the greater Lansing area, and we are really grateful for those. We're looking at them. Even if we don't email you back, trust us, we're looking at them. And everybody here at WKAR Radio has been working overtime with our launch of Current State here this week. And one of the real key guys in this process is our news director, Kevin Lavery. This has been an interesting transformation here, going from our former model of doing spot news and daily features to a live thing every day. And you've been at the forefront of this thing. You have done a wonderful job. So
thank you, Mark. I really appreciate that. This has absolutely been an ensemble cast for a very long time. Even before Joe officially joined us, just a scant 10 or so days ago, he was very much involved behind the scenes, even from Chicago before he got here, in the communication of this show.
This is Joe Lindstroth, our producer, who came to us from WBEZ, the NPR affiliate in Chicago.
That's right. I am extremely happy and very pleased to be part of this project. I believe in what we're doing here with Current State. This is a platform. This is a method of reaching everyday people here in mid-Michigan that we have really wanted to have for a very long time. It's really a nice forum, I think, Mark, for us to kind of stretch our legs, you and I and Scott Pohl and Melissa Benmark, really to stretch our legs as journalists. You know, one thing I sort of bemoan from time to time is when I go out and I do a news story, maybe it only ends up as 45 seconds on the radio during the newscast, and so much hits the cutting room floor. There's so much behind the scenes interviews and insight and perspective that never really gets to be heard by people. And I think this is a nice, great opportunity to really expand upon the issues of the day that we're encountering each and every day. And it's going to be a great voice and a great platform for our citizens here in mid-Michigan to make it their show as well.
And you nailed it on that last point. We want to make it diverse and eclectic, too. So it's more than just about the news. One interesting tidbit about Kevin Lavery you should know is that he spent some time in the U.S. Navy at the bottom of the world and in Antarctica. So it was you were the perfect guy to look into some business that is this happening across the street in engineering?
It is. Here on the campus at Michigan State University in the Natural Sciences Building, a gentleman named Dr. Nathaniel Ostrom, who is part of the zoology department, is part of a research team. Really, he's got a few bottles of this ancient water that's from an Antarctic lake sitting in a freezer in his office at Michigan State. Back in November, Mark, a team of researchers published a startling announcement. They were drilling into the ice cap that covers Lake Vida in Antarctica Dry Valleys region. That's about 80 miles from where I was stationed in McMurdo. And there in Lake Vida, the scientists found bacteria thriving in this saltwater brine solution below the ice cap. These microorganisms grow without sunlight at temperatures around 8 degrees Fahrenheit. And researchers say they have survived in this environment for nearly 3,000 years. This discovery has scientists reevaluating the possibility of life in deep space in places like Mars, places like Jupiter's moon Europa. This is a real hot debate in science right now. Again, I spoke with Dr. Nathaniel Ostrom. He's a professor of zoology at MSU, and he's part of the Lake Vida research team, and he told me about his findings.
The investigators knew from a previous expedition that there was active microbes in Lake Vida under 20 meters of ice, but they really had no idea what kind of metabolism they were carrying out or how they managed to survive under these conditions. And they also knew that the brine had an incredibly unusual chemistry. There were exceptionally high concentrations of nitrate and also toxic levels of nitrite that would normally kill most microbes, and exceptionally high concentrations of nitrous oxide, the highest that have ever been reported from any aquatic environment. And so there's a real puzzle as to how these compounds were derived and obtained such high levels. And then were the microbes using these, or were they using other materials for their metabolism? And so my expertise in particular is looking at the carbon and nitrogen cycle and looking for isotope signatures of key microbial processes.
The term brine, people usually associate that to mean seawater, but this is really not water in the sense that it's hydrogen and oxygen, correct?
This is water, but it has a salinity that is 6 times the salinity of seawater. So it's really among the highest salinities that we've seen in many environments. And it's also exceptionally cold at minus 13.5 degrees centigrade. So it is almost as cold as the freezer that you have in your home.
That's about 8 degrees Fahrenheit, I believe.
Yes, it is.
So these microbes, and is it fair to say bacteria, essentially is what mm-hmm. this is, have these microbes been found in other environments on the Earth, or was this a brand new species?
Some of the species had not been reported before, but they were very related to species that had been found in other Antarctic lakes, in the Dry Valley lakes, but very unique from microbes found anywhere else.
I think that maybe a zoologist might see microbial bacteria as a Lego building block for evolution. Why is that so exciting to find these microscopic animals, these organisms, in this environment in terms of what it may tell us about frozen worlds like Europa, Jupiter's moon, or the polar ice caps on Mars, which is really pretty hot commodity these days in the science world?
Yes, it is. What Lake Vida really did for us is really push the limits of where we think that life can exist and the physical conditions under which those microbes can exist. Minus 13.5 degrees is pretty darn cold, and it's hard to envision that microbes can actually be active at those temperatures, and we've demonstrated that they are. And also, it's 6 times the salinity of seawater, and as I mentioned, toxic levels of nitrite, and yet these microbes still manage to survive as well. So it really pushed the limit of how we think life can exist on Earth and give us much more optimism when we look for life on other planets. Titan, as a moon of Saturn, has an incredible organic soup, and it has, basically methane oceans, yet is extremely cold, on the order of, I believe, about minus 150 or colder. And while all the compounds and chemicals that are needed to support life are present on Titan, we never really gave it much thought because it is so darn cold. And on Europa, one of Jupiter's moons, we know that there is a liquid sea underneath the ice, but it is also probably quite cold as well. So it gives us more optimism about where we might find life.
What was challenging or difficult about the logistics of this whole thing? Here you were at Michigan State, not in the field in the Antarctic, but you were helping to relay and in some ways make sense of the information that was being transmitted from thousands of miles away.
Well, for me, most of the work that I have to do is done in the laboratory back here at Michigan State University. We do some initial experiments in the field, but once the experiments are done, we basically seal the vials and then they are preserved and shipped to me. So most of the work actually is done here. But it did mean that a great deal of preparation had to go into, leading the expedition and making sure that they had everything they needed to do to be ready. Because as we often say, if you're missing something, you can't just run to the 7-Eleven. You've got to be very well prepared in advance. And we spent an enormous amount of time writing protocols, how to conduct these experiments, and speaking with the investigators who were actually in the field conducting them to make sure they were ready.
Do you have some of those samples physically here at MSU?
Yes, we do. Yeah, and we still have brine from Lake Vida in our freezers at minus 13.5 degrees. So we can take a look in the freezer if you wish. It's not terribly exciting because you open it up and there's just some bottles with some water inside them. But we're still continuing to do some work on them. So we're coming into our laboratory where we do a lot of work on stable isotope ratios. And we have a variety of stable isotope ratio mass spectrometers here that we use for a variety of analyses, including the Lake Vida samples. So here is our freezer where we have the samples. It's reading minus 12.5 degrees right now, so a little bit warmer than we'd like it to be, but within range. And opening up the freezer here, you can see a variety of different samples of Lake Vida. This one's labeled LVH2, indicating it's Lake Vida and it's dedicated for analysis of hydrogen gas. And you can see an orangish tinge to the water because it's got exceptionally high concentrations of iron. And you can also see that the septum on here, which is rubber, is bloating out a little bit, which means there's a lot of pressure in these gases, and it's hard to actually keep them in the bottles sometimes.
How did you ship them from the Antarctic to Michigan and make sure they were intact for the entire journey?
Yeah, that was a very amazing process, and I was very, very concerned about that because if the water warms up in transit, it will expand and either break the bottle or blow out the top of the bottle. And I was impressed. The U.S. government has a contractor that runs McMurdo Station, and they are also in charge of shipping samples back to us. And they came in the most sophisticated cooler I have ever seen. multiple layers of wood and styrofoam, and extensively packed with ice packs that were chilling it at the appropriate temperature. And they actually had a thermocouple measuring the temperature inside, and they were recording the temperature as it was in transit. So we monitored all of that, and before we even opened it up, we saw the temperature was right where it needed to be.
I understand now the main thrust of your research is a process called serpentinization.
Serpentinization is actually a suite of reactions. If you take water that's very high in nitrate and nitrite and it reacts with iron, it can produce nitrous oxide, it can produce hydrogen gas, and during the whole reaction of serpentinization, there's also a suite of actually organic compounds that are produced. So we think that some of the chemicals that were the soup that fostered early life on Earth were derived from serpentinization. This process is relatively rare today on the surface. It actually occurs very deep underground. So in a way, we have a very unique environment to study this initial reaction that might be the seed for the chemicals that support life.
I did some research about the origin of the name Lake Vida. I think the lake was named for a sled dog about 100 years ago that was in the Antarctic. But of course, if you know your Latin, Vida or Vita means life. Kind of ironic.
And quite appropriate. So it's a puzzle of this system, and there are a lot of unresolved aspects of this, and we certainly hope to go back.
Dr. Nathaniel Ostrom is a professor of zoology at Michigan State University and part of the team involved in studying microbial life at Lake Vida in the dry valleys in Antarctica. Thanks for having time for us today.
Thank you very much.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Labrie.